Welcome to Watching Bloomington with your host, Barry Lesso. Each week, B97 and Hoosier Country bring you stories about nonprofit agencies helping people in our area. Stay informed, stay involved, and stay tuned.
Welcome to Watching Bloomington. Each week we have a chance to talk with a community leader who helps make this a better place to live. And I'm happy to have with us this morning, Kirsten Boucher with Monroe County CASA. Hi, Kirsten. How are you?
I'm fine, Denise. How are you today?
Great. Could you tell us a little bit more about what is Monroe County CASA? What do you do?
Well, CASA is an acronym for Court Appointed Special Advocates, and we're a nonprofit that recruits and trains and then supervises community volunteers who advocate for children who are in the court system due to abuse or neglect. The CASA volunteers will speak on behalf of the child, they'll gather information, and give recommendations to the court.
Mm-hmm. And how does somebody become a CASA? Like, what's involved with that?
They must first apply and go through an interview process. But we have a 30-hour training that right now we're doing through Zoom. But after you complete the 30-hour training, you are sworn in by the judge, and then we give you a case and work it with you. So that's one thing that I want to make sure people understand, is that you're not out there on your own trying to figure it all out. Mm-hmm. That I have very experienced professional staff that work the case with you side by side and guide and mentor you and give you resources to do the best job you could do as an advocate.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of requirements are there for being a CASA? I mean, obviously the volunteer training program, but you have to be
right.
A certain age or...
You know, the idea behind this whole process is that we're wanting lay people just mm-hmm. who have a passion to help children mm-hmm. and who have common sense. So first responsibility of a CASA is to have common sense. But the only really restriction is you must be 21. That's a state rule. And then the other restriction is you can't have any criminal history on your record at all.
Mm-hmm. And how long do people usually serve, like when they do this? And, you know, could talk a little bit more about, you know, what's the time commitment monthly, and is there a length of time people do this?
Yes, we ask people that volunteer if they can give us 1 to 2 years of service. Mm-hmm. And that is because that's typically how long a case is. Mm-hmm. And we want to avoid as much as possible a CASA leaving a case in the middle of it before mm-hmm. the child finds permanency. So mm-hmm. many people who are involved in the case, the DCS Department of Case Child Services, mm-hmm. caseworkers and therapists, foster placements, they all change throughout the life of the case. But the one constant adult who's there with the child is the CASA as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. So that 1 to 2 year commitment. However, most of our volunteers stay longer. We have mm-hmm. one volunteer who's been with us for 24 years.
My goodness.
The average is 3 to 4 years is the average. And of course, we have people who take one case and leave, and that's great that they serve that one case. Mm-hmm. And then we have others who stay longer. Mm-hmm. The hourly commitment on a weekly basis is more monthly. We say to plan on 10 to 15 hours a month. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is done through phone calls and email, mm-hmm. especially with Zoom. We're now mm-hmm. doing Zoom meetings. It will look different. There are three things that a CASA must do every month. Mm-hmm. They must visit their CASA child. Again, whether it's Zoom or in person on the phone, right now it looks a little different. But in, mm-hmm. in the old world, we used to have them visit them in person once a month. Then they have a good communication with the Department of Child Services case manager for each of them to share and update their information that they have. And then for the CASA to talk to the CASA supervisor that they're assigned to keep them updated and figure out the next plan moving forward. Mm-hmm. If you only have to do those three things that month, you might only put 3 or 4 hours in, mm-hmm. but cases erupt. And foster placements change, and you have to visit mm-hmm. the child in a couple of different places, or there are meetings with parents that you must attend. So that could raise the amount of time, 10 to 15 hours. Mm-hmm. If you are putting routinely 20, 30 hours a month on a case, your CASA supervisor is going to kind of talk with you and say, hey, you're going to burn out. Why do you need to put in this many hours? Is there a way we can alleviate that or help you with mm-hmm. that? Because we don't want to overuse and burn out the CASA.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think that support mechanism sounds like it's a really critical part for all this. That sounds great. Now, with the training, I mean, it sounds like you probably would cover a lot of very interesting and helpful topics with this. And what kinds of things are in the training?
You know, the training consists of 10 sessions, and mm-hmm. each session could be at least a semester long class in a university.
Yeah.
We talk about basic child development, mm-hmm. but we also deal a lot with addictions, which a lot of our parents are dealing with, mm-hmm. Mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Of course, we go through the legal system and how to navigate that through child welfare. And then we also have a lot of guest speakers come. We have a great source of professionals in Bloomington who are very proactive in helping CASA. And they come in and speak to the volunteers, give them their life experience and answer any questions they have and mm-hmm. explain to them what they can be prepared for in a case and what they might view. Domestic violence is a big issue as well that we tackle. It's just 10 sessions, 10 different topics that mm-hmm. we delve in. We don't expect the CASAs to leave training as experts on any of it. Mm-hmm. There's no possible way to do that, but we give them enough information to be aware, and mm-hmm. we give them resources to, if their case, mm-hmm. you can have 3 cases and never deal with domestic violence, and then your fourth case, that's all it is. Mm-hmm. And so that's when you would pull out your resources and do a little research on domestic violence. So a plethora of volunteers come in to speak to the training class, and a wide variety of topics we do discuss.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you have a really nice broad background when you're ready to start.
Yes, we. And I'm not sure I understand that question, that personally or the CASA.
Oh, for the CASA volunteer, sounds like you're connecting them with a lot of different resources and a lot
yes.
of different topics that will be helpful.
Yes, yes, yes. They they have a taste of a lot of little things. Mm-hmm. But now, as far as the bringing up the background of the volunteers, we're in the envy of Indiana. All the CASA programs in the state just marvel at the quality of volunteers we have, because IU gives us a lot of educated post high school graduates, but then we have a lot of people who didn't go to college who advocate also, and their life experiences are just phenomenal. And bringing in the different variety of people who come in, we're able to match them with the kids that we feel would be a best fit in personality and experiences and mentoring. And it's just a wonderful thing to see who volunteers for CASA.
And I would imagine too, in terms of looking at your next training. So when's your next training that's coming up? You said it's in June.
It starts June 7th. And mm-hmm. so it's coming up pretty quickly. So if people mm-hmm. are interested in becoming a volunteer, they need to apply very quickly, because we have to go through the interview process and the vetting process. The last day of applications would be May 28th. Mm-hmm. And then prepare for meeting and interviewing that next week to get ready for training. Mm-hmm. But that would have to be our deadline, the 28th.
Mm-hmm. And to do the application, would somebody go online or contact the office? How do they do that part?
Either way, but the best way to do it is go online, and there's a tab to apply, and you fill out the application right there electronically and submit it. One thing that I do want to talk about with the training that I failed to mention just a second ago, is held in the evenings, mm-hmm. on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings, mm-hmm. from 5:30 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. And it starts on the June 7th, and then the last day of training would be June 30th.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And that's going to be virtual this time still.
It is. Boy, we tried to make it in person, but mm-hmm. we have about a 60-40 rate of people who are still comfortable. And so right now it's still Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. And I'm assuming that you are in need of CASAs right now too. What's the caseload like right now?
We are definitely in the need of CASAs. Our caseload certainly did not go down through this COVID year. We definitely have kids coming in with what we're finding, really, and I know I'm going off track here, but what we're finding is that the Department of Child Services report that they're getting less calls to the hotline for abuse, but the calls they are getting are much more severe abuse. And so that's what we're finding that we're getting as well. We're getting the same amount of cases, but the abuse and the situation seems to be a little bit more severe for the children. Right now, we do not have enough volunteers. And we reached out to, and part of that has to do with a handful of volunteers were not comfortable doing this work during COVID, and a few have started to come back. But what we had to do is we reached out to all our volunteers and asked them to double up if they could. And so many volunteers answered the call, and it's amazing. So they're taking more than one case at a time, and we are serving the kids now, but it would be nice not to have to ask that of volunteers.
Are you finding, and I know that was something that was a great concern with children not being in school necessarily, that, again, they didn't have contact with the kind of adults or support mechanisms who might have noticed things. So are you finding that to be an issue?
Exactly. That is my theory on why there are less calls to the hotline, because a lot of the hotline calls are from teachers, from daycare workers, people who just have everyday contact with the children. And because they were at home, I think a lot of kids fell through the cracks, and it was scary. Kids started going back to school in person, the uptick in calls started. And we expected that.
Are you finding too, with any trends that you're noticing with the calls now from the pandemic, are you seeing more issues with people being isolated? Are you seeing more issues with addictions? Are there any kind of trends that you're noticing with some of the cases that you're dealing with?
The biggest trend that I'm noticing is that the educational neglect is huge. And as far as I know, I've been doing this for 25 years, and I cannot remember very many, if any, cases that came in purely for educational neglect. There was always some other reason. Maybe the parent had a huge addiction issue and the kids weren't getting to school because of that. But we have two cases right now that came in purely because of educational neglect, and the kids are just not going to school virtually or in person. It's hard to hold people accountable for educational neglect because the homeschooling parameters in Indiana, all a parent has to do is say homeschooling. So it's hard to prove whether that they're getting educated or not. So the fact that we have two cases means that it was a pretty severe situation. And I'm very pleased that DCS has decided to open them.
Oh, great. That sounds really good. So hopefully those children will get what they need. So, if people are interested in more information, what's your website that people can go to?
It's an easy website, MonroeCountyCASA.org. All spelled out, CASA, C-A-S-A, MonroeCountyCASA.org.
Great. In general, too, you know, with the pandemic, how has that impacted? You know, obviously, your trainings have been virtual and you've had to modify some visits, it sounds like. But how has the pandemic impacted you in general? And what are you seeing moving forward? Obviously, some things are getting better now that more people are getting vaccinated.
There are, believe it or not, there's some positives, and then there are negatives, of course. The biggest negative is the in-person contact. For a long time, we prevented CASAs from seeing the kids in person. And even if you're advocating for a six-month-old, that six-month, you're not going to develop a big relationship with that six-month-old as a CASA, and they're not going to be able to tell you anything. But you are going to be able to observe. You're going to be able to observe the home conditions. You're going to be able to observe the affect of the child. If the child is reaching for its caretaker for comfort, if the child acts afraid or not afraid, there are different signs that you can look for in person, which is really hard to detect with Zoom meetings. And so the in-person contact is something that we're really missing. We're starting to get back into it, but it's still lacking. In-person contact with each other, staff and volunteers, man. And again, I'm not saying anything that everyone hasn't experienced. I know that. We all miss each other. And one of the greatest things about the CASA program is that we're a tight-knit family community, and we have to support each other as best as we can emotionally, and just be there to be able to vent and all, because this is tough stuff that the CASAs go through, and that's hard. A CASA for some reason, they don't feel as comfortable calling us up and saying, boy, I need to vent, I'm having a rough day, as opposed to having a meeting and coming in and talking, and we be able to ask them, you know, what's going on, how things going for you. So we're missing that. A positive, which is really interesting, and the judges will tell you this across the state, is that all our hearings now are still virtual through Zoom. And we are finding parents are attending hearings much more regularly than they used to. And is it because of the ease of it? That's the only thing I can think of. And some of them are still in bed. Some of them are still in jammies, but we don't care as long as they're there to discuss their kids and figure out what we need to do to get them home.
That's funny. So, I mean, it's interesting. So that some of you anticipate some of that continuing as an option if compliance is better, or do you think it's going to go back the other way?
You know, I don't know. I talked to both Judge Galvin and Judge Harvey recently about that, and they both have little different opinions of it. One really likes the virtual. The other really misses the in-person.
So yeah.
I think it has everything to do with the Supreme Court of Indiana and what they dictate is the law and what we need to do.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Now, in terms of, you know, all the work that you're doing, obviously you're a nonprofit organization. So I would imagine that that's been really tough this past year, is finding support for your work, since a lot of organizations have not been able to have their typical events and fundraisers. I don't know if you could talk about that a little.
Absolutely. The donations are, I don't say the donations are down, but the fundraising is down, and it's because we haven't had those events. We've tried a couple of virtual ones, and the people who attended were very generous, and it was a positive event, but a fraction was brought in on what we typically do. We're hoping, we have a gala every year, and last year we tried it virtually, and again, that's one that wasn't as fruitful as in the past. I think that the final decision hasn't been made, but it's October this year. It's on a Friday, and it's October 1st. And we are really kind of trying to push to have it in person. And we're going to have it at the convention center. So we're hoping that be able to have the upstairs and be able to spread out. For people who are still a little uncomfortable, we're not going to be packed in there. And so we're hoping to do that. And we're kind of excited and anxious too. We feel like we've had a break, but we don't want that break anymore.
Sure.
We want to connect with the community.
Now, fingers crossed, and I know along with the financial piece, of course, an event like that is good publicity and outreach, and, you know, people are able to come and hear from volunteers and hear from staff and meet people who are involved. And of course, it's a very good educational tool as well as a fundraising tool.
Yes, absolutely.
So in the meantime, though, I'm sure that you can use support if people want to donate. What should they do? Should they get on the website or contact, or what's the best way people could support if they are able and interested?
The very easiest way to donate to us is go on our website, MonroeCountyCasa.org, and there's a donation tab for you. That's the easiest for most people. Otherwise, a lot of people just mail in checks to us. Our address is 201 North Morton Street, Bloomington, 47404. We're very welcome, willing to accept any check that you want to send us. Also, not only do we need financial support, but we just need people to talk about CASA. You know, ask people if, you know, they've heard of CASA and if they know anybody who is a CASA. And I tell you, if you run across a person who's a CASA, they're going to bend your ear, because every one of them is passionate about it and wants to talk about it. So spreading the word, as well as donating financially and volunteering. That's what we need from the community.
Are there other ways that people can get involved or volunteer if they're not able to, you know, do the CASA piece? Are there other things that your organization needs?
We have community members on committees, and they're the community outreach and the fundraising committees and the gala to put on our annual gala. So if they're interested in working with a fun group of people and to organize events and all for us, then yes, please contact us, because we're always wanting to look for people to help with that.
Wonderful. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for being with us this morning and for all the work you do. And I hope you get a lot of people signing up to be CASAs by the May 28th deadline. And I hope the training goes really well.
Denise, thank you so much. And everyone, please volunteer for CASA.
Excellent. Thanks. This has been another edition of Watching Bloomington, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Watching Bloomington with Barry Lesso, brought to you by Carl Lamb, attorney at law. For 37 years, Carl Lamb has been a premier attorney in South Central Indiana, helping his clients through extremely difficult times, drawing on his experience, reputation, and responsiveness. For a free initial consultation, call Carl Lamb today at 812-332-1420. Want more? Listen to full episodes on our website at whcc105.com and wbwb.com.